Light in me, there's a light in you, there's a light that shines as us. Welcome once again to One Love Center Presents. One Love Center presents The Power of Now, awesome book by Eckhart Tolle, his first book. This is The Power of Now, a guide to spiritual enlightenment. And that's what we're all about here, folks. Welcome, and we surely appreciate you here. On June 25th, we are into summer, and we are into summer right now, in the power of now. My name is Rodney Gittins, and I'm your host. So we welcome you once again to a One Love Center presentation. One Love Center is a teaching chapter. We are affiliated with the Centers for Spiritual Living. And we are a teaching chapter. We are One Love Center, a place where love grows. And so, yes, we are all about spiritual enlightenment. So welcome aboard, and feel free to contribute by calling or joining us online. And if you're listening in an archive, please feel free to send us an email, maybe something you'd like to contribute and we can get to at a later time. So right now, we are in The Power of Now. It's Chapter 9. We are still in Chapter 9, Enlightened Relation. It's Beyond Happiness and Unhappiness, There is Peace. And this is what we've been talking about for a while. So I fully believe that my co-host, Hajar Rahim, and I am a religious science practitioner, as is she. However, she's kind of upped it a notch and has recently passed her panels to become a a minister. She's a full-fledged minister. So it's now Reverend Hajra Rahim. And we share the pulpit at One Love Center. And we do meet first and third Sunday of every month at 11:30 a.m. All are welcome. We meet in Brooklyn at 886 Pacific Street. That's in Brooklyn between Washington and Underhill Avenue. Very easy to get to. We meet at a place called The Village at Gareje, 886 Pacific Street, Brooklyn, New York, 11236. Once again, that's 11:30 a.m., the first and third Sunday. We are a Brooklyn teaching chapter. One Love Center is lovingly created as a community, a fellowship, meditation, prayer, sacred service, spiritually supported healing service, spiritual speakers, musical transformances, study workshops, and spiritual films. Please feel free to contact us. You can reach me and anything that goes on at One Love Center at 917-755-1418. And our email is onelove, that's O-N-E-L-O-V-E, at onelovecenter.org. It's all spelled out, onelove at onelovecenter.org. We look forward to hearing from you about the power of now or anything. We also take prayer requests, and we also love to give prayer. So you give us a prayer request, and we'll give you a wonderful spiritual mind treatment. It's our form of affirmative prayer, knowing the very truth about who you are and what you're about, no matter what the situation. And I like to say, if there is so much joy, you just don't know how to handle it, we can pray about that too, and know that we will know the truth that you, yes, you can handle that joy and more, and the joy that shows up in all of the good that you can imagine and more. Welcome to One Love Center. And at One Love Center Presents, we are Into the Power of Now. The chapter is 9, Beyond Happiness and Unhappiness, There is Peace. When we left off, we were talking about that happiness really is not truly derived from a secondary source. And if it is, it's not very deep. And this is what he says on, Eckhart Tolle says on page 156 in the hardcover. He says a happiness that is derived from some secondary source is never very deep. It's only a pale reflection of the joy of being, the vibrant peace that you find within as you enter the state of non-resistance. Being takes you beyond the polar opposites of the mind and frees you from dependency on form. Even if everything were to collapse and crumble around you, you would still feel a deep inner core of peace. You may not be happy, but you will be at peace. And I like that. Because if we are expecting that things on the outside, outside conditions, experiences, anything that begins with an EX, meaning it's outside of us, then it's temporary. That means it's coming and it's going. You may not know how long it will be around, but if we are looking for our happiness to be dependent on an X, something, experience, then it's temporary. It's not going to last. So be prepared that your happiness will not last. Now, if it says, you know, you will be at peace. Now, I happen to think that if I am truly at peace, that is my happiness. That is my contentment. I don't need anything to happen for me to be at peace. I think that's a big struggle that our nations and our nations' leaders have on this globe, thinking that they have to beat somebody into submission for there to be peace. as Eckhart Tolle always reminds us, that's ego. And those that is more than one ego fighting it out, doing what unchecked ego does. And it creates a conflict. And that's what happens when you get two egos who are, many people call it an accident when cars collide on the road. I say it's not an accident, it's an on purpose. There are two people purposefully doing their best to occupy the same space at the same time, and they were successful. Okay? That's two egos claiming that they are right. It's my right. It's my space. And when they both come from that place, there is conflict, and then shortly after there will be peace. Now, are they happy? Maybe not. Probably not. Most likely not. They won't be happy. But there will be peace. Now, if they are aware of it, then they may get to enjoy that peace. There might be something deep inside of them that finds contentment with the fact that it's happened. It's finally happened. Maybe the straw that broke the camel's back. Whatever it is, something has brought them to a stop, to a halt. And for that moment, there is peace. Maybe they take a breath, a sigh of relief, a release, before the ego kicks back in. How could you do this to me? But for a moment, and maybe you can recognize this in your own life, for a moment, there was peace. I'm just going to backtrack a little bit. Eckhart Tolle says on page 155 in the hardcover, he says, nothing can give you joy. Joy is uncaused and arises from within as a joy of being. And that's what we're talking about. The joy of being. And once we realize that that's all that's necessary is an awareness of the joy of being, that's where we find the peace. That's where we find that joy that just rises to the top. Doesn't need an invitation. It's there all the time. It's up to us to be aware and to just say, I'm at peace. All is well. Everything is as it is in this moment, in this now moment, what I like to call a nowment. Now moment, just cut it short and call it a nowment. In this now moment, there's nothing that has to be done. Nothing that has to be said. Nothing that has to be controlled. It just is. And when we get to that state, not only do we feel peace, we experience peace because it's flowing from within to without, and so the peace that we are shows up on the outside of who we are. We also feel the joy. And that is within, and it reminds me of that. It's probably a gospel song from way back. The Lord didn't, the world didn't give it, and the world can't take it away. That's a reminder of that, all of these principles that we talk about, they're spiritual laws that are inherent in our very being. That is love and joy. That is our inner strength. That is the light that we are. It is the peace that we are. The world didn't give it. The world doesn't give you anything. It doesn't come from the outside. It starts within you, in the very core of your being. You might think of it as the core of the planet Earth. You know it's hot, hot, molten, whatever it is, everything. And it's just swirling around, and it's what actually keeps the planet spinning properly, you know, and on its orbital path around the sun. And so we have that within ourselves. We have a core of energy in the very core of our being, and I don't mean just our body. Because remember, we need to look past the body. The form is not the truest nature of who we are. It's an expression. It's an outer pressing. It's an outer pressing of our true nature. And that's the fire within. So yes, that is the place from which the spiritual law comes from. The law, the love, the joy, the peace. Everything that brings forth the prosperity, divine health in our body and body of affairs. All of these come from within, cannot be given from without, from the outside. That's what the best of doctors know, that they are not the ones that do the healing or the curing. All they do is assist the body in being in alignment with what the mind says it wants. That's how cancer is cured and does not return. When the mind is in control, is at peace, all is well, then there is no state of dis-ease in the mind or in the body temple. Because what shows up in mind is what's going to show up in the body temple. That's just very plain. It's not even metaphysics. It's science. And scientists now are proving and have been proving for quite some time, especially since in the 1900s, the correlation between thought and the outer experience, whether it's in a physical body experience or something even further outside of our body, that thoughts are things, thoughts have energy, and thoughts impact everything around them. Why, you might ask? Why is that, Rodney? Well, that is because it's all one. It's all one life, and I know you could have answered that, and probably some of you did, immediately, or maybe you wanted to, and held back for half a second. I could have gone, wait for it, but no, that's the truth. Thoughts are things, as is everything. There is nothing but connection. It's all energy. Thoughts are energy. We are energy beings. We only seem to be separated by skin, by air, by distance. But we're all one. And so that's why prayer works. Prayer works because it's the same energy that is surging through me. And when I am in alignment with that truth and knowing that truth about you, about anybody who I'm thinking about, those thoughts turn into an experience. Sometimes it's an experiment. We're experimenting on ourselves every time we speak. It shows up. That's why when scientists do tests, and that's pretty much all they do, they constantly want to prove their theories. They have realized that as an observer, they are not just observing. They are actually participating by observing, by them looking at a certain thing, expecting a certain occurrence. That expectation, that thought, that energy actually influences that which they're looking at. Have you ever stared at somebody and they kind of turned their head and looked at you? They could feel you looking at them, and you know it, you felt it. You know somebody's looking at you. Same thing. You can feel it. You can feel the gaze. You've heard that. When somebody's staring and gazing at you. Some people are much better at getting your attention than others. I can feel his look. Oh, the way she looked at me. You can feel it. That's the energy. That's the same energy that scientists now realize that they've got to try to remove from their experiments because it gets in the way of the outcome that they'd like to monitor, to track, to prove their theory. I'd like to acknowledge that we do have another caller on the line. And if the caller did want to say something, or and any of you, while this is going on live, all you have to do is press the number one, and I will see that you're ready to talk, that you would like to contribute something. So when you do that, I'll know, and you'll be on live with me. I'm Rodney Gittins, your host. This is One Love Center Presents The Power of Now, a book by Eckhart Tolle, his first book. And it is a powerful undertaking. And it's really helpful. So, we're moving on further into Chapter 9. Now, he has something that I think is very interesting. He says, watch any plant. This is on page 157, is the second paragraph from the bottom. He says, watch any plant or animal and let it teach you acceptance of what is, surrender to the now. Let it teach you being. Let it teach you integrity, which means to be one, to be yourself, to be real. Let it teach you how to live and how to die, and how not to make living and dying into a problem. And the problem is that we look at one or the other or both as negative. I had a customer on my job today who, for as seemingly positive and uplifting as she appeared on the outside, smiling and joking, her words told a different story. Her words were, well, I'll try, and I hate this, I hate that. And not many people can say that and smile, and she did, and I thought I had to mention that. And she kept talking about what she wanted to do, about how hard it's going to be. And so I had to stop her, and I said, okay, well, it's time for a lesson. Right now, I just want to share something with you. I know you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're looking for work and everything. However, everything that you say that you want to experience, you keep digging up with negative affirmations. And she didn't know what I was talking about because she wasn't really listening to what she was saying. And so I repeated back to her what she said. And she said, well... And she didn't have an answer. And so I just spoke a couple of things like, well, you know, and I mentioned the power of now, not the book necessarily, but I did say, you know, you'll want to access or be aware of the power of now, the power that of the words that you're using now are affecting your future now moments. You're setting yourself up for failure. And she started to come around, and she said, okay, well, I guess I'll try better. And I'm like, well, yeah, you could, or you could just be better, do better. And she picked up on that, and I thought she was a very good student. And then we could get on with the rest of our business. But many times we're just going on automatic with negative conversations that people aren't even hearing. We're having that conversation with ourselves. What Eckhart Tolle says, and then I backtrack to page 156, he says the ego believes that through negativity, it can manipulate reality and get what it wants. A Course in Miracles rightly points out that, he continues by saying, whenever you are unhappy, there is the unconscious belief that the unhappiness buys you what you want. The fact is that negativity does not work. Instead of attracting a desirable condition, it stops it from arising. Instead of dissolving an undesirable one, it keeps it in place. Negativity's only useful function is that it strengthens the ego, and that's why the ego loves it. And most of the time, and what Eckhart Tolle says throughout this book, is that most of us are not aware that the ego is piloting the ship, that ego has control. We're just going on cruise control, and it's ego that's running the show. So many people will speak loaves of negativity, probably even before they get out of bed. Many people are like, oh, gosh, got to go to work. Oh, got to do this. And they're setting themselves up to not be happy with a lot of negative self-talk. And if you, and by listening to the sound of my voice, you are now aware that that could be a possibility for you. Catch yourself. Listen to yourself. Converse with yourself. You know, maybe you don't have to care if anybody's listening. You know, maybe you don't talk so loudly if you're outdoors. And if you do, that's okay. I mean, people might just actually leave you alone if you're outside having a conversation with yourself. Hopefully, you're having an argument and you're winning the argument on the positive side. Do you know what I mean? Do I want to do that? Do I really want to think this lowly about myself? No, of course not. I love myself. I'm a wonderful person. I deserve the best. Have those kind of arguments and win with a positive self-talk. Uproot that negative talk. You have to shine the light on it. You have to shine the light on it and bring out the truth. We are taught, unfortunately, and most times subliminally, to have a negative conversation with ourselves. And we believe it, we argue for it, and unfortunately win in a negative conversation, and stop there, and allow that energy to manifest. The exact same thing we really, really don't want. Not in our heart of hearts, not our deep down true desire. We desire the best, but we end up wanting the best and not getting or having or being the best. We're left wanting. And therefore we are unhappy and many times not at peace. So we are moving beyond happiness and unhappiness, which is the title of this chapter. We're not allowing for happiness to dictate how we're feeling or how we're going to be from one moment to the next. I love what Eckhart Tolle also says on page 157. He says, have you ever seen an unhappy flower or a stressed oak tree? Have you come across a depressed dolphin, a frog that has a problem with self-esteem, a cat that cannot relax? Well, sometimes our cat seems pretty stressed out when she's not being fed on time. Or a bird that carries hatred and resentment. Well, no, not really. The only animals that may occasionally experience something akin to negativity or show signs of neurotic behavior are those that live in close contact with humans and so link into the human mind and its insanity. So, yes, I can see that our cat gets stressed out when she's not being fed on time, because if she was outdoors, she would not be stressed. She would do what she needs to do to eat. But since she's dependent on us, for her food, she gets stressed when it's not coming, when we have already predetermined that she should be eating. So when, you know, an hour before it's feeding time, she's ready. And so then not only will she be stressed, but she'll turn it back and stress me out. It's like, now! She knows the power of now. It sounds like the power of meow, but it's the power of meow. And I've said that before. So she's definitely a Zen master, as Eckhart Tolle says. He says in the last paragraph on 157, I have lived with several Zen masters, all of them cats. He also mentions that there is a natural wisdom in ducks, because they do not have a mind that keeps the past alive unnecessarily and then builds an identity around it, like humans tend to do. We have a long-running story about an early injustice. I got stuck with a diaper pin when I was a child. Oh, yeah, they don't love me. Or any story that we can make up and wrap story after story around it and build a fortress of stories around the original hurt. There's a question on page 158. He says, couldn't a negative emotion also contain an important message? For example, if I often feel depressed, it may be a signal that there is something wrong with my life, and it may force me to look at my life situation and make some changes. So I need to listen to what the emotion is telling me and not just dismiss it as negative. Eckhart Tolle answers it by saying, yes, recurring negative emotions do sometimes contain a message, as do illnesses. But any changes that you make, whether they have to do with your work, your relationships, or your surroundings, are ultimately only cosmetic unless they arise out of a change in your level of consciousness. It can only mean one thing, becoming more present. When you have reached a certain degree of presence, you don't need negativity anymore to tell you what is needed in your life situation. But as long as negativity is there, use it. Use it as a kind of signal that reminds you to be more present. And I think the big thing there is, how long is it going to take for you to keep negativity around, and so now you become aware of it, and now I'm like, okay, I need to be more present. There is a saying that if you become sick and tired of being sick and tired, then you'll do something about it. When you just had it up to here with the negativity, then you'll do something about it. If you're using negativity as a barometer. When I get sick and tired, meaning you're going to experience a lot of sickness and tiredness until you get sick and tired of being sick and tired. That's just entertaining negativity. You know, until, you know what? Now, some people, it may be a minute. They can't stand being sick and tired more than a minute. Some people, it could be half a lifetime. Could be 50 years or more. Or however long they're going to live. But, I mean, if you're going on 30, 40, 50, 60 years of negativity and you haven't had enough yet, well, I guess there's more in store. However, at any moment, we have this big thing that makes a big difference as us animals on this planet is that we have choice. We are not ruled we're not ruled by instinct. some of us may be, when we are really not being present, we can become very defensive, feeling a sense of harm. However, we do have choice, and we can choose to no longer accept the habitual way of thinking that continues to create the same experiences. Maybe they come packaged differently, but it's the same feeling. Anger, resentment, hatred, all these negative emotions, energy motions, moving through and in our body of affairs, and all it takes is a thought. I mean, it could be a simple thought like, no, I don't want that. And no doesn't have to be negative. There are positive no's. No, I'm not standing for that anymore. There's no reason to. I'm sick and tired of dealing with this for the last 30 seconds. You know, each second is precious to me. I choose not to spend another second in negativity. And when we decide and when we make up our mind, we create a new choice, that's when the change occurs. Instantly. It happens instantly. What's necessary many times is to stay with that choice. Yes, wouldn't you agree that it's important to stay with that choice? And if any of the callers on the line want to share, just press the number 1 on your phone, and I'll know that you would like to share. And I'll open up the line for you. Eckhart Tolle says, so whenever you feel negativity arising within you, whether caused by an external factor, a thought, or even nothing in particular that you are aware of, look on it as a voice saying, attention, here and now, wake up. Even the slightest irritation is significant and needs to be acknowledged and looked at. Otherwise, there will be a cumulative buildup of unobserved reactions. Eckhart Tolle is saying, as I said before, you may be able to just drop it once you realize you don't want to have this energy field inside you and that it serves no purpose. But then make sure that you drop it completely. If you cannot drop it, just accept that it is there and take your attention into the feeling, as I pointed out earlier. And so what we're doing, what he's mentioning is, if you're not going to drop it, it's like, I don't know if this game is ever played anymore, or if it ever was, hot potato. And you just toss around a hot potato. I think I remember it from early childhood. Maybe some people would consider it a waste of food, but... at camp. Yeah, summer camp. We played hot potato in summer camp. That's right. I don't think anybody wanted to eat those potatoes anyway. But we toss around a hot potato, and of course, if you drop it before you pass it on to somebody else, then you're out. Now, I remember not learning early on to just drop it. Let me get out of this game. Why am I going to stand and wait for somebody to throw a hot potato to me, catch it, and then send it on to somebody else? That's like asking for pain and then trying to share the pain with everybody else. Now, there is a saying in the 12-step world, it says, pain shared is pain lessened. But do I want to stand there and invite pain, and we're all standing in a circle asking for it and then sharing it? No, so I think that game might just have dropped out. I mean, maybe we do it now with a water balloon on a hot day. That might bring, that sounds more fun. So anyway, you need to drop it. Drop it like it's hot, right? Remember, there was some popular song, drop it like it's hot. That's right. If it's not serving you any good, let it go, and don't pick it back up. That's one of the things that's talked about in 12-step, whether it's AA or NA or CA or any other A, whether it's Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, or any 12-step program. It's one thing to stop the behavior, but can you stay stopped? That's the only way lasting change is going to occur, is to stay stopped. Once you put it down, don't pick it up. Now, it's more difficult with food. People who are consider themselves food addicts, because it's very difficult to not pick up food. That's where a little bit more awareness comes in. Eat only when you're hungry. And eat a proper-sized meal. That's where the work comes in. Don't pick up food when you're not supposed to eat. Don't pick up the food that's not doing your body well, extra sugars or whatever that you've identified that's not working for you. It's the awareness. You're putting down what doesn't work and picking up an awareness and a greater awareness about what works for you. And so we're moving on. Now, he's talking about resistance. He says, as an alternative to dropping a negative reaction, meaning for whatever reason, maybe you're not ready to drop it, you can make it disappear by imagining yourself becoming transparent to the external cause of their reaction. I recommend that you practice it with little, even trivial things first. Let's say that you are sitting quietly at home. Suddenly there's the penetrating sound of a car alarm from across the street. Irritation arises. What is the purpose of the irritation? None whatsoever. Why did you create it? You didn't. The mind did. It was totally automatic, totally unconscious. Why did the mind create it? Because it holds the unconscious belief that its resistance, which you experience as negativity or unhappiness in some form, will somehow dissolve the undesirable condition. Think about it as if you're in traffic, driving your car, or riding a bicycle, or your skateboard, or skates, or whatever. Somebody cuts you off and you become irritated. There is an inner belief that says that irritation is going to dissolve the undesirable condition. But we know that's not what happens. The condition, okay, it happened. They cut you off. Maybe you're on a subway or a bus and somebody steps on your toe. It happened. And they're no longer stepping on your toe. That was an undesirable condition. Now, if we are holding it in our mind as that person stepped on my toe as though they're still stepping on our toe. Now, if they're just standing on your foot, you know, you could count the seconds until they get off. And of course, you'll be suffering throughout those moments. Or you can say, excuse me, you're standing on my foot. Get off, or whatever you need to say for them to instantly get off of your foot. And then they're no longer on your foot. Now what do you choose to do? Are you going to create story around it? Are you going to call them names, call yourself names, call the situation names? You'll have a story to tell once you get to school or work or home. Or are you just like, okay, you stepped on my foot. Now you're no longer on my foot. Or are you going to have anger and resentment? Maybe hatred. Be very unhappy. What he's saying is that this is delusion. The resistance that it creates, this irritation or anger, in this case, is far more disturbing than the original cause that it is attempting to dissolve. Interesting. We're talking freedom again here, folks. We're talking freedom. The situation occurred. It happened. It's not still happening, except in the mind. And the mind will replay it over and over and over and over and over again and start attaching things to it. He says this can be transformed into spiritual practice. Feel yourself becoming transparent, as it were, without the solidity of a material body. Now allow the noise or whatever causes a negative reaction to pass right through you. It is no longer hitting a solid wall inside you. He says, what if somebody says something to you that is rude or designed to hurt? Instead of going into unconscious reaction and negativity, such as attack, defense, or withdrawal, you let it pass right through you. Offer no resistance. It is as if there is nobody there to get hurt anymore. That is forgiveness. In this way, you become invulnerable. You can still tell that person that his or her behavior is unacceptable, if that is what you choose to do. But that person no longer has the power to control your inner state. You are then in your power, not in someone else's, nor are you run by your mind. Whether it is a car alarm, a rude person, a flood, an earthquake, or the loss of your possessions, the resistance mechanism is the same. Now, that second aspect of releasing negativity definitely is a spiritual practice, I got to admit. I mean, it is one way of doing it. And it sounds like already using meditation. I mean, he mentions becoming transparent without the solidity of a material body. That's maybe not the easiest thing for a beginner or, you know, novice or anybody for that matter to do. It takes practice. Now, if somebody steps on my toe and it hurts and I'm still feeling that throbbing pain in my toe, am I likely to be transparent? No, it's just going right through me. I don't feel anything. All is well. I have a reminder that something just occurred. So it's going to take great practice for me to be transparent, to allow that negative reaction, whatever caused that reaction, to pass right through me. I can do it. I've done it. Is it my first thought? No. Most of the time, no. I would say I still have probably a habit of thinking to react. I don't react like I used to react. Before, there was no thought process. It was whatever happened, instant reaction. Now, I have been blessed with peace of mind to such a degree that I can have a thought between the occurrence and my response or reaction. That is a blessing. Those are the kind of things that can save your life. I mean, if somebody stepped on my toe and I just jumped on that person and they turned out to be big and bad and you could knock me over, you know, easily, my reaction may not be the smartest course of action. So I have the freedom, I have choice to, like, take a moment, take a breath, and free myself from reacting immediately. Now, if you're still standing on my foot, like I said, I can let them know, get off of my foot, whatever I need to say for them to get off of my foot. And at that moment, it's over. And if I'm still feeling it, I might have a little work to do. I have to breathe and allow for my true mind, capital M, the mind that's not in my brain, to have its way, to not let the ego feel embarrassed or hurt or ashamed. No, I can let the ego do what it needs to do. I direct it to say, excuse me, get off of my foot, please. You're hurting my body. And that's ego's job. That's it. And then I get to that place of peace and drop it. So much so that I don't have to turn it into a story to have to tell my coworkers. You won't believe who somebody, you know, 500 pounds stepped on my toe, you know, and didn't even know it, and we start making up stories about it, you know, about what we did or didn't do. We can be free of that because that's the ego. You know, all that noise and all that chatter is the ego. It wants to keep us, unfortunately, it wants to keep us, period. This wants to keep us. It wants to keep control. Because what we really need to do is trust the invisible, trust the inner power that is us. Again, is that which is really speaking within us is not the ego. Okay? So, of course, this could be, again, you know, preaching to the choir. But happiness is an inside job. Our true happiness, first of all, depends on our joy quotient. The more joy you get to live, the more happiness will just be an everyday experience. Joy is always within. And as Eckhart Tolle says, there's nothing from outside can give you the joy. The world can't give you joy. And the world can't take it away. And that infuriates people. You know, people that's like, when you're joyful and cheerful and happy and people wonder, why are you so happy? And then they might wonder, like, oh, it's going to rain. Oh, it's cloudy. Oh, this is terrible. You know, I'm like, it's up to you whether you want to accept that or not. Not that they're trying to make you do that, but you've heard the saying, misery loves company. That's the ego. You know, it can do bad all by itself, but it loves company. That's your choice. A number of times today at work, I had to walk away from gossip. And it's stuff that wasn't even true kind of gossip, you know? Not that I'm trying to qualify it, but if it's not true, then it's really not doing any good. If it is true, then it's true. Then what's the big deal? If it's not true, then it's not true. Either way, I don't need to stand around and listen to it. It's not benefiting me in any way unless, you know, it's evacuation procedures or something, you know, or what I need to do to be better on the job. If it's that kind of truth, I'm all for it. But if it's talking about somebody else, about what they did or didn't do, or what people think they should do or shouldn't do, I don't need to be around that. And it takes practice. That's another spiritual practice. Freeing ourselves. So that moves us actually into surrender. He says, don't look for peace, on bottom of page 160. Don't look for any other state than the one you are in now. Otherwise, you will set up inner conflict and unconscious resistance. Forgive yourself for not being at peace. The moment you completely accept your non-peace becomes transmuted into peace. Anything you accept fully will get you there, will take you into peace. That is a miracle of surrender. I remember years ago when Mike Tyson, the boxer, was undefeated and knocking everybody out in like one round, it became very popular to talk about surrender. Surrender and Mike Tyson in the same sentence. It's like, surrender is not getting into the ring with Mike Tyson. That's surrender. So once you get into the ring, you know, you pretty much fight or get knocked out or something. True surrender is not to even get in the ring. You know, and if you find yourself in the ring, surrender is get out the ring. Because at that time, it seemed like anybody, no matter how good they were getting hurt. And they got hurt before they could surrender. So don't get in the ring. He goes on to say, you may have heard the phrase, turn the other cheek, which a great teacher of enlightenment used 2,000 years ago. He was attempting to convey symbolically the secret of non-resistance and non-reaction. In this statement, as in all his others, he was concerned only with your inner reality, not with the outer conduct of your life. So, we're moving right now further into this chapter, the nature of compassion. And what I'd like to do before we continue is present you with a little music that I think that you're really going to enjoy. And it has everything to do with surrender. Some of you may know it. It's by a wonderful, wonderful spirit on the planet known as Ricky Byers Beckwith. And she sings about surrender in such a way, and she's talking about I Release, and the song is called I Release. And it helps me to surrender. It helps me to get to a place within me, my thinking, that it takes me from a place of not thinking and reacting, and then thinking negatively, to a place of greater awareness. So I'd like you to take a listen right now. This is I Release by Ricky Byers Beckwith of Agape International Center of Truth in Los Angeles, California.
There was a time in my life I thought I'd have to do it all for myself, and I didn't know the grace of God was sufficient, and I didn't know the love of God was in him. But now I can say, you are discouraged, struggling just to make it through another day. You got to let it go, let it all go, and this is what you have to say. I'm
Yes.
Yes, isn't that wonderful? Only here for God. And that is release. That is surrender. That is what happens when you surrender. You see, it's one thing to say, I surrender. But then what? What am I surrendering to? We're surrendering to that power within us that is always with us, that was with us before we knew that there was a us. Before I knew I existed, that power was me anyway. Before I became self-aware, and who knows how long, I mean, I could have been in the womb self-aware on some level. And so, and when you think about it, as an infant, as a, you know, as an embryo, you know, as a fetus, we're being fed. All of our needs are generally met. You know, we are tied to our Creator physically. You know, we have that umbilical cord, and it is pumping whatever it is we need to grow and develop on that physical level. You know, we have that connection. There's nothing to think about, at least, you know, not as far as our good is concerned. You know, I mean, unless for some reason all the nutrients aren't being passed through, but for the most part, you know, we have everything we need. You know, I mean, we'd like to be also receiving love, maybe some words, some wonderful loving feelings and thoughts and everything else. However, we are connected. And so when we come out of the womb, we don't feel that connection anymore. Now, there are some parents who do their best to make the child feel like they are still divinely connected. You know what I mean? I mean, not necessarily spoiling the child, but not making the child feel like they need anything, that they're going without, they're going hungry, their cries are going unheard, sitting in a diaper for, you know, hours that's soiled. No. And so when we grow, you know, hopefully we're already in a state of knowing and trusting, and this way I mean surrender, knowing and trusting that every need is met, that we're not feeling like we're wanted and we have to go outside of who we are to get what we think or feel and want that we need. And so there's a surrender that says, you know, all is well. I know that I have been divinely supported all of my life, and everything is working out for my highest good. And most of us don't speak like that as a child or even as adults. You know, it takes practice and study to think that on a regular basis. That's the kind of surrender. We're surrendering, empowering the ego. We're surrendering and not allowing that power to go off into negativity land. That's a surrender. You know what? I surrender. I'm not going to fight anymore. I'm getting out of the ring. You know, I can't. It's not up to me to fight with ego, because as soon as I do, I lose. I think I'm fighting with Mike Tyson. I've lost. I've lost before I even stepped in the ring, at least when he was in his heyday. But Mike Tyson found compassion. One of his fights, he said, I don't want to fight anymore. I don't want to hurt that person. I remember that. I'm like, ooh, that's it for him. You know, fight game is over for him. I don't want to hurt that person anymore. That's compassion. You know, something came over him. He was still a devastating fighter. He just chose not to use his power to do that anymore, his energy. And that's pretty awesome. So once again, this is One Love Center, Brooklyn Teaching Chapter. We are part of Centers for Spiritual Living. We are members of the global organization, Centers for Spiritual Living. We are One Love Center. We meet in Brooklyn, New York. I'm the spiritual director. My name is Rodney Gittins. And my partner, my assistant spiritual director, is Hajar Rahim. Now she's a licensed minister, Reverend Hajar Rahim. We are practitioners, spiritual practitioners. We meet Sundays, the first and third Sunday of every month at 11:30 a.m. We meet at the Village at Garage, 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York, 11236. By telephone, I can be reached, 917-755-1418. And we are so glad that you are listening. We'll also be very glad if you would consider supporting One Love Center Presents. We'd like to continue bringing not only The Power of Now, but whichever other books or conversations that we embark on after this. So your tax-deductible donation would be greatly appreciated. Give whatever you are moved to give, and that will help keep us on the air. For further information, you can visit us at our website, onelovecenter.org. That's onelovecenter. That's onelovecenter.org. And look for our PayPal. Or you can contact me at, or you can send us an email at onelove@onelovecenter.org. That's spelled out, One Love, O-N-E-L-O-V-E, at onelovecenter.org. And we certainly appreciate your listening and your participation and your generous giving in whatever amount that you feel moved to give. Thank you so much, and bless you. And I know that even though it's better to give than to receive, one of the best ways to receive is to give. And it works. It's a wonderful, wonderful circle of love. And we know that One Love Center is a place where love grows, and love in all the different form grows. So our love of giving, our love of receiving grows and widens the circle and makes even greater opportunities happen. So thank you so much. So I'd also like to share that besides speaking at One Love Center on the first and third Sundays, I'm also speaking at Unity Temple of Christ in Laurelton, Queens. This is in Queens. It's and I'll share the address with you. And the address is, just give me a moment. I want to make sure I give you the correct address. It is 228-20 137th Avenue in Laurelton, New York, 11413. Sunday service begins at 11 a.m., and I'm there on the second and fourth Sundays for now. Unity Temple of Christ. And they have a phone number, and their number is 718-877-2761. So I look forward to celebrating life with you at One Love Center, the first and third Sunday, or Unity Temple of Christ on the second and fourth Sunday. And we have a great time, and we're up to a lot of great stuff, and you'll hear more about it coming soon. And if you'd like to receive emails from us, certainly email us at onelove@onelovecenter.org. Well, let's get back to the power of now. Oh, there is something else I'd like to share. Let's just keep moving. So, we're talking about compassion. Let's pick it up from page 161, the bottom. It says the nature of compassion. And once again, for anyone on the line, if you'd like to mention anything, contribute, say anything, just press the number 1 on your phone, and I'll see it, and I'll know that you have something you'd like to share. So the nature of compassion, he says, having gone beyond the mind-made opposites, you become like a deep lake. That's deep. The outer situation of your life and whatever happens there is the surface of the lake. Sometimes calm, sometimes windy and rough, according to the cycles and seasons. Deep down, however, the lake is always undisturbed. You are the whole lake, not just the surface, and you are in touch with your own depth, which remains absolutely still. You don't resist change by mentally clinging to any situation. Your inner peace does not depend on it. You abide in being, unchanging, timeless, deathless, and you are no longer dependent for fulfillment or happiness on the outer world of constantly fluctuating forms. You can enjoy them, play with them, create new forms, appreciate the beauty of it all, but there will be no need to attach yourself to any of it. And so he goes on to talk about compassion. He says, when you're confronted with someone else's suffering or unconscious behavior, you stay present and in touch with being and are thus able to look beyond the form and feel the other person's radiant and pure being through your own. And this is in the middle of page 162. At the level of being, all suffering is recognized as an illusion. Suffering is due to identification with form. Miracles of healing sometimes occur through this realization by awakening being consciousness in others, if they are ready. Compassion is the awareness of a deep bond between yourself and all creatures. But there are two sides to compassion, two sides to this bond. On the one hand, since you are still here as a physical body, you share the vulnerability and mortality of your physical form with every other human and every living being. Next time you say, I have nothing in common with this person, remember that you have a great deal in common. A few years from now, 2 years, or 70 years, it doesn't make much difference. Both of you will have become rotting corpses, then piles of dust, then nothing at all. This is a sobering and humbling realization that leaves little room for pride. Is this a negative thought? No, it is a fact. Why close your eyes to it? In that sense, there is total equality between you and every other creature. So, what he's saying is that we are all one, and we can live our whole lives thinking that we're not until we become dust to dust in this human form. One of the most powerful spiritual practices, he continues on page 163, is to meditate deeply on the mortality of physical forms, including your own. This is called die before you die. Go into it deeply. Your physical form is dissolving, is no more. Then a moment comes when all mind, forms, or thoughts also die. Yet you are still there, the divine presence that you are. Radiant, fully awake. Nothing that was real ever died. Only names, forms, and illusions. It's this very, you know, new thought. There are many other religions that believe that there is a spirit. There's a light that shines in me. It's not just my body. That, and he's bordering on saying that the body is an illusion. He's saying nothing that was ever real, that nothing that was real ever died. Only names, forms, and illusions. So he's not quite spelling it out. He's not saying your body is an illusion. And some people, even in religious science, will say that. We're saying it's not real. It's real form, but it's not the real essence of life itself. That is the invisible. That is the power that transcends all form. The power that is in all form is the invisible power. It is life. Some people call it God, Allah, Buddha, or whatever name. It doesn't matter. They call it Mother Nature. It's just one energy that inserts itself in everything that we call living. And maybe there are other things that it's in that we just aren't aware of, that we don't call living. Maybe we don't even perceive it. However, this activity of being fully aware of our divine presence, this is where we find compassion. When we can connect with another person and not get tied up with the look, the form, when we can give a beggar change and not feel sorry for them or talk about them afterwards, we can just give. It's like giving to ourselves or to somebody who we know and love dearly. That's compassion. That's the essence. That's the bottom line. We are all one. That's more spiritual practice. Can I say that I do that all the time? No, I can't say I do that all the time. I mean, I may give and have to work myself up into giving from a place of oneness. Doesn't have to do with the amount. Doesn't have to do with anything that I think about the person. However, it works better if I think kind, loving, compassionate thoughts. Because we're all one. If I'm thinking that about that person, I'm thinking that certainly about me and you. That's for the good. That's the three musketeers, all for one and one for all. And so that's the invitation, compassion. It's inviting us to be passionate in the mind about life, about all of life. That's our invitation. That's our challenge. Because that's how we'll be treating ourselves. Eckhart Tolle says, as we begin to wrap up, the realization of this deathless dimension, it's not a dimension of death, it's deathless dimension, your true nature is the other side of compassion. On a deep feeling level, you now recognize not only your own immortality, but through your own, that of every other creature as well. On the level of form, you share mortality and the precariousness of existence. On the level of being, you share eternal, radiant life. These are the two aspects of compassion. In compassion, the seemingly opposite feelings of sadness and joy merge into one and become transmuted into a deep inner peace. This is the peace of God. It is one of the most noble feelings that humans are capable of, and it has great healing and transformative power. But true compassion, as I have just described it, is as yet rare. To have deep empathy for the suffering of another being certainly requires a high degree of consciousness, but represents only one side of compassion, is not complete. He says true compassion goes beyond empathy or sympathy. It does not happen until sadness merges with joy, the joy of being beyond form, the joy of eternal life. And that's where we leave off, because that's a lot to swallow. The deep feeling level, your own immortality. You see, that's when we can become very compassionate, when we realize we are all one, that if there is no death, that inner presence is eternal. We're not just linked, we are it. We just think that we're separate. He says, when sadness and seemingly opposite feelings of sadness and joy merge into one, become transmuted into a deep inner peace, I think that's still in a form, in form. Unless we're not feeling either or either. The peace of God, you know, I think the most that we do our best to attain to is the realization that God and I are one. And it doesn't even become God and I. God is I am. Not we are one, there's only one. And so the peace of God is not made in the image and likeness of humans, even though it's very easy for us to want to attribute to God our feelings and emotions. I know the Old Testament talks about an angry God, a vengeful God, like God could be hurt. God could get mad. No. That's human beings creating a God in human image with those weaknesses, with an ego. No. The peace of God is not the kind of peace that we're looking for when, you know, everything's quiet, there's no war on the planet. There's a peace of God is a deeper peace. God is self-aware, sentient being. It's everywhere, at all times, at all places. There is no war of God. It's all peace. God created everything. How could God worry? How could God be impatient? It's like we use the word God, and in our minds, somewhere that we're still expecting it to be something that maybe looks like Santa Claus or looks like us in some way, shape, or form. Acts like us, talks like us in human form, human qualities. God has all quality of everything, and we call it God because we don't know what else to call it. There is a high spiritual consciousness that says it is the nameless one. How could you put a name on anything that created you? All of a sudden, we get to name it? You'll have to forgive me. It seems like a rant. And this is an argument for me, for myself. And I'm forgiving myself. I use the word God. I call it short for good. It's still a label. We're using the English language or whatever language we're using. It's never going to encompass all that this presence is, this idea that knows itself and created everything out of itself, always more, never less. So we can have a deep feeling level and recognize our own immortality. However, we're still doing it from the realm of form. You know, we're reading a book, we're talking, we're speaking, we're listening. We're still in form. Our greatest realization comes when, yes, we have this understanding that there is more to me than meets the eye. Thank God. I am so grateful to know that there's more to me, there's more to you, there's more to us than our five senses can perceive. However, many of us have gone through existence thinking that's all there is. And that shortchanges our compassion. If we think that death is the end, when the body drops, that's the end of the road, I think it short-circuits our compassion while we're walking around. There are some who might think the opposite, and they're like, you know what, life is short, let's be as compassionate with love and peace and honor as we possibly can. Make the most of this time that we have in this form. I would like to think the majority of the people on the planet behave that way. And I think that's true. I think most do. Otherwise, it'd be constant war. I mean, war with everybody, not just soldiers who are told to fight. So anyway, you're listening to The Power of Now, as experienced by myself, Rodney Gittins. Thank you for sharing time with me today. We look forward to seeing you at One Love Center, first and third Sunday at 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York. So if you're out of town listening, please come visit. Let me know that you're coming. We'd love to have you, and just show up anyway. You can surprise me. I like surprises most of the time. We'd love to have you. I'd like to thank our listener. I think that's Brenda, wonderful beloved, on the line there. And if you want to say hi, is an opportunity to say hello. And One Love Center. This is a place where love grows. We are 3 years old, young and counting, and many, many great things yet to come. We want to congratulate Hajar Rahim in becoming a licensed minister. So wonderful. And we want to also thank each and every one of you that has ever participated, knowing that there is greater good that is happening for us right now. We're going to leave you with a song by Miss Melissa Phillips. Awesome, awesome. Oh, there is only love. Love that God is. Goodness.
Yeah,
I couldn't
actually,
tell.
Yeah, and Ricky Byers, I mean,
I released?
Her singing was clear. Her singing was clear.
Right.
But everything else was noise.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But it was still good.
Okay, good.
We were coming through clearly.
Oh, okay, so I guess I maybe had to turn it down more. Maybe it was too distorted.
Yeah, maybe that's it. You know how when they tell you on the radio to turn it down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds better now, right?
Oh, you were always crystal clear. It's only when you played music did it sound bad.
But I mean, the way the music sounds now, turn it down.
Well, now I can't hear it.
Really? I hear it.
Yeah, well, because you're playing. Oh, yeah, I hear it because you're playing.
All right, let me put it down.
Shops after work, the hair salons.
Oh, okay. How was it?
Oh, so I got an appointment with the one on 130 something street. The first one I went to on 116, she's like, oh, I only do transition. That means more money.
Charlie does what?
Transition, which is more money and weave, it sounds like.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, so she was really just saying she doesn't do